Welcoming to the Shilling Show, the president of Murata Wealth Management, David Murata, along with Matt Illian, who joins us also from Murata Wealth Management today. And this is such an important topic. It is going to be getting more from Social Security, up to $250,000 more. And gentlemen, thanks for joining us on the program today. I can't believe that I haven't heard this discussion anywhere else. I pay pretty careful attention to the news, but we're going to have it here today. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
All right, so I think we need to start out by an overview of the current state of Social Security, because there are so many people reading letters to the editor and so forth that I believe are really confused about where Social Security stands today. So if we could start out with that and go right to it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Social Security was enacted into law in 1935, and at that period, Social Security life expectancy was, I think, age 62. And so if you made it to 65, you had already surpassed life expectancy. And so it really was for people who were well beyond life expectancy. And it was given with some benefits. And now it's expanded so much that it supports most of the elderly. They very few people save. I think 42% of single women are just living off Social Security. It's their sole means of income. And it's grown into one of the biggest entitlement programs and is headed for insolvency. And so the problem that we have is that it's this massive piece of legislation that people have paid into. But the truth is, when you paid into it, you weren't supporting your own Social Security. You were supporting your parents, and your parents took it out. And so the money that we all put in isn't there. And if our kids don't put money in, then there won't be enough money there. And the problem is, people aren't having enough kids. So we're in a problem of a huge number of baby boomers approaching Social Security age, and very few people left behind in the working age to actually support it, and a retirement age that you can retire on Social Security at age 62, which is too young for the modern longevity.
I'm guessing that the numbers would be a lot different today with Social Security if we had, say, 53 million additional Americans living since 1973 that otherwise were not. That number would probably make a very substantial difference in the economics.
Yeah, two things would certainly help Social Security. One is more workers coming behind, people who had bigger families. And the second would be if we had raised the Social Security retirement age, or if we had continued to die young. I'm not sure which of those is the right solution, but certainly raising the Social Security age to 70 or 72 or 75 would certainly help the statistics.
There's also a lot of talk about it. You mentioned that there's no Social Security trust fund, but we've heard that Congress over the years has raided Social Security funds and basically put in an IOU. Is that an accurate depiction of what's happened to some of the Social Security money? Has it been appropriated for other things?
Well, Social Security buys Treasury bonds. So what they get is an IOU. A Treasury bond is just an IOU. And that's ballooned the deficit in this country. So yes, in essence, some people can say, well, we do have an asset. We have Treasury bonds. And other people can say, well, a Treasury bond is just an IOU. They actually took that money and spent it on the general fund. They didn't keep it anywhere or do anything else with it. It has been spent. And so both sides are right, but I think the IOU side has the upper hand in the moral argument.
Mm-hmm.
Because an IOU is all that a Treasury bond is.
Matt Illian, we've got about a minute before we head to the break here. Social Security was characterized by Rick Perry, and a lot of people stood up and cheered, including me, when he called it a Ponzi scheme. Is that an accurate depiction of Social Security, economically speaking?
I wouldn't call it a Ponzi scheme, although it is a pay-as-you-go system.
Mm-hmm.
So it certainly requires people to continue to pay in. But a Ponzi scheme is sort of naturally going to explode at some point. And if we raise, as David mentioned, raise the age just a few years, it really would solve the problems that we're having.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because many people are saying, well, this needs to be done, and needs to be done incrementally. People are living longer. It makes sense. And yet nobody seems to have the political fortitude. I mean, is this going to become an economic necessity, or we can continue to hobble along like this indefinitely?
There's certainly some compromise that could be reached. The conservatives don't particularly want Social Security to be means tested, but neither do the liberals either.
Mm-hmm.
They all want it to be a universal benefit, because then the universal benefit has political support, And without that, it becomes elder welfare, which is, I actually think, what it ought to be. If you means-tested Social Security, you know, a good third of people probably wouldn't get any Social Security, and then the rest might actually have enough money to get Social Security. And if they privatized it, then at least you'd have your own money, and you could continue to do it that way. And I think some combination of those two benefits is probably where Social Security is headed. We just need some political willpower strong enough and compromise crafty enough to be able to satisfy both sides.
We're going to talk about some really smart decisions that you can make as you're considering your Social Security when The Shilling Show returns in just a moment. Stay with us.
The Shilling Show is on the air. News Radio 1070 WINA.
I know there were a number of people who had called in my initial rant, and so I would just say, if you would like to talk to us, we'll have open phones at the top of the hour you can take advantage of. Right now, if you have questions or comments for our guests as we talk about getting more from Social Security, up to $250,000 more, and you should be all ears right now as we talk with Matt Illian and David Murata from Murata Wealth Management. You can call us at 977-1070. We would love to hear from you, and we do welcome your comments, your questions, your challenges, and your criticisms on this program. All points of view are welcome. All right, I think Leon's getting a caller here ready to go, and so let us go to the phones and say hello to Greg. Greg, welcome to The Shilling Show. You're on with Matt and David. Go right ahead.
How are you folks today?
Doing well. Thank you very much, Greg. Thanks for calling.
You know, Rob, you know me. You know I'm one of the most conservative people you know. But I have to say, with regards to Social Security, I've been paying in Social Security since 71 or 72. I'm 50, almost 54, so it'll be 40 years this year. I was a kid when I started, and I was held at the point of a gun to pay that, because had I not paid it over the years, I probably would be in jail with the IRS. I just wrote a big check to them. Primarily, the biggest part was Social Security. So anything you do to Social Security, I feel that money is due back to me. I know that the Congress has abused it, and that makes me very angry. Some people depend on Social Security, and I think it should be maintained, but I don't mind seeing a means test. I would rather not have to wait till 70 to get mine, and I think that the fact that I had to pay it, that is due me back at all costs, and I'm going to sign off and let you all comment.
Great. These are very good challenges, and these are questions that we need to discuss, so I'll let our guests jump right in on that.
Yeah, Greg, you're like many Americans. I paid into it, and I want to get the most out of it. And it's interesting. A lot of people are in the same place that you're in. They don't want to wait until age 62. In fact, about three quarters of Americans file for benefits before their full retirement age, and most of those are filing at age 62. It turns out sometimes 62 is optimum, but not usually. There's so many different scenarios for Social Security. There's two different incomes. There's two different ages. There's a difference in age. And so if you're married, you have to take joint benefit maximization into account. And that's our first principle, is it ends up making men act a little more like women, because their wives might inherit it, and women act a little bit more like men, and so you have to play those two together.
Yeah, I just say, Greg, this is Matt. That just as I've studied a little bit about the politics of Social Security, most of the fixes seem to be affecting those under age 50. Even if we started with the younger ages phasing in either means testing or the benefits applying a little bit later, they're not the extremes. And so I think if I were listening, I wouldn't want folks to think, I'm about to file, I better do it tomorrow, because if I don't, then the benefits aren't going to be there.
Yeah, that's an important point, because we're talking about a major decision here, and I want to get into these choices. Because, I have no idea what you're talking about today. I mean, I understand theoretically, but since I don't receive Social Security and have never had to make this choice, you know, I have no idea what people are confronted with, and people that are facing this down sometimes have to make a fast decision when they really should be deliberate about it. So what happens as you approach the age? What's the process and what are the choices at hand?
Yeah, the interesting thing is that most people are given choices when they go to the Social Security Department. They're given a choice such as, well, would you rather get $1,000 a month now, or would you rather get $1,100 a month starting in 7 years? And there's no way to do that math in your head. It depends on your age. It depends on, will my wife inherit the higher step up if I wait? And the questions like that are very subtle, and yet there are huge differences between age 62 and when you die at age 92 or 100 or something like that. It very much matters how long you're going to live and what the differences are. And the Social Security Department now allows you to make those decisions online. So you go online for information, and it's like automatically you can start signing up and picking a choice. And you've gotten no advice on what's probably the biggest financial decision of your life. You're just going to say, well, I want to take it as early as possible because I don't even know if it's going to be here. And you make a huge mistake that you then have to live with for the next 30 years.
And in fact, most people who are making these decisions are making the wrong choice.
That's correct. Yeah, you know, from the I've spent about 3 years working on a calculator with David to find out when the optimal time is to choose Social Security, and it turns out that 75% of individuals usually claim before their full retirement age, which for most folks retiring now is age 66. By the time I retire, it'll be age 67. So it's phasing in slowly. But it turns out that most of the time claiming early is wrong. And so if most of the people are claiming early and most of the time claiming early is wrong, that means most of the people are making the wrong decision. And I think with David, I think the thing that I want to communicate is that a lot of people don't realize the amount of money that they're sitting on. Social Security for, you know, a person who has a $2,000 a month benefit, which is fairly standard for someone who's worked their entire career. That represents at least $500,000 when you look at a future value. And that's more money than a lot of people have dealt with before. And to make a quick decision on that amount of money is something you want to think long and hard on. There's an example that we will have coming out in the paper, in an article we've written, where it's a husband and wife who both have benefits, and their total joint benefits over a lifetime is just shy of $1 million.
That's a serious amount of money. And yet the government, correct me if I'm wrong, but if I just think of this on face value, the government benefits from people making the wrong decision. I mean, it allows Social Security to extend out further because people are not getting their full value out of it. Is that an accurate depiction?
It does. And while I'd love to cut back on the costs of Social Security, I would hate it. I would hate for any one individual not to get the full value. And that's another way that Social Security discriminates against poor people, because poor people end up usually filing without any advice and filing younger. And so poor people end up getting less out of Social Security than rich people do, who take the time to seek financial advice and make the optimum choice.
And by the way, you guys have a talk coming up on this. And we should have done it at the beginning of the show, but let's issue the invitation now and we'll do it again at the end.
We do. Next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow, Wednesday, March 14th at 5:30 p.m. at the Senior Center. You don't have to be a senior. Everyone's welcome. It's open to the public. From 5:30 to 6:30, Matt's going to be presenting a lot of the results. And we'll be answering questions, and hopefully you'll be able to figure out from that at least what you ought to be looking at and the choices you ought to be making.
And that's very, very important. I hope people will take advantage of that. Let's go to the break. When we get back, we have Lois on the line, and it looks like another caller. Lots of people calling in, and I'm glad people are paying attention because, again, I haven't heard this discussion anywhere before, and it is critically important to your financial future. The Shilling Show back in just a moment. There's one line open for you at 977-1070.
It's The Shilling Show with Rob Shilling, only on WINA.
The phone number if you have comments or questions for our guests, David Murata and Matt Illian from Murata Wealth Management. By the way, they're on line at muratonmoney.com. And we did have a caller off the air just asking quickly if you could repeat the seminar information, then we're going to go right to the phones. Date and time? Location?
Yeah, the seminar is next Wednesday, March 14th, 5 p.m. at the Charlottesville Senior Center. And again, you don't have to be a senior. Just show up at 5 p.m. or 5:30.
Senior Center next Wednesday, the 14th, 5:30 at the Senior Center.
Yep.
All right. Let's go to the phones right now. And I do promise you we'll get to some of the techniques here before we get off the air because they can save people some money. Lois is on the line. And Lois, welcome to the Shilling Show.
Hi, Rob.
Hi there.
Hi, yeah, I always have a problem with the Social Security thing. 3 points. One, I don't think Social Security is an entitlement program because we paid into it. Number two, I think I think means testing is redistribution of wealth, and yet, and so the Republicans, conservatives are always saying, oh, they don't believe in redistribution of wealth, yet they love means testing. And number three, it seems like means testing is giving it to those who weren't prudent. It's redistribution of wealth and giving it to those who weren't prudent with their money. Maybe they went out shopping every weekend and others saved and scrimped so they could have a good retirement. Mm-hmm. So we should give our money to those? I don't think so.
Yeah, this
I'll
is
be
a,
greedy.
Yeah, no, this is a great question, and I totally agree with you on means testing. I've never seen it. I mean, I understand practically why people would say it's something we might need to do, but I don't support it for the reasons that you stated. I'd love to get a response from our guests.
Yeah, and I agree that none of these are good answers. Means testing, the way I've seen it, would be what conservatives would give up in order to get future privatization. So if we means test and we have a safety net, then we could privatize, and anyone who failed to somehow make it in the private handling of their own private Social Security would then fall into a means-tested safety net. And so the way I probably didn't make that clear, but I've seen it as a political expedience that one side would give means testing and the other side would say we're going to privatize it in the future along the lines that, say, Chile does it and does it very successfully. If you did that together, then I think the means test would have some basic benefit, and those who got a privatized benefit would probably have, instead of a $500,000 benefit, closer to $1 million benefit. By being able to manage it themselves.
Lois, a quick response?
I don't know. It still sounds like redistribution of wealth and taking it from those who have more money and giving it to those who don't.
Yeah, and Lois, you're exactly right. It is redistribution of wealth. It then turns the Social Security that's not private into elder welfare, which is what I think it is for many Americans who have not saved and not adequately prepared. Social Security was never intended to satisfy 100% of retirement. It was intended to supplement it by maybe a third. And so the other two-thirds, unfortunately, people are not saving.
And Lois, thanks very much for the call, because those are important considerations. Let's go to Hank, who's been waiting very patiently, and there's a line open at 977-1070. Hello, Hank. You're on with David and Matt. Go right ahead.
Well, one of the things that I think is remarkable, that is, as bad as the Social Security system is, how much worse would it be? I mean, as bad as it is right now, and maybe your guests have some idea of figures on this that I haven't heard yet, how much worse would it be if everyone had survived? I mean, you've got a lot of money that was never collected because people, you know, passed away before they could collect Social Security. So my point is, as bad as we are right now, how much worse could it be if we had a more perfect society where people were actually, you know, everyone had survived to start collecting it? Does anybody have any idea on what those figures could have looked like?
That's a really interesting point. I don't know. Do you guys have a sense of what it would have been like had more people survived and taken advantage of the system?
Well, there's certainly a lot of moving parts. If everything that we had paid in had been set aside for us, then all of the people who died could have left that wealth to their children, and all of the people alive today collecting Social Security would have had twice as big a benefit. So the difficulty is I think all of the people surviving is not the problem. The problem is that the government took that money in and did nothing with it other than put IOUs into the system and then spent it on immediate budget considerations.
Let's go to the phones and say hello to Jane. Jane, thanks so much for calling the Shilling Show. Go right ahead.
Thank you. This is very interesting. I'm retired, have been for some time. I'd like to make one comment. When Social Security was first started, they didn't have all the benefits they have now. For instance, the woman that never worked, she gets retirement based upon her husband, whatever. They have the SDI. they've added so many more things to take away from the Social Security fund that was not originally in it. Now, and I would go back to what Lois said. The means test to a degree has already been applicable to me in many areas, that a couple areas that I didn't expect. For instance, when you file your federal income tax, Social Security, 85% of it's taxed, which it was not at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if your income is over a certain amount, your Medicare premium goes up. I'm single, I'm a widow now, and so all of these things are hitting me in the face, and I saved to take care of myself in old age, and now all these penalties for saving.
Yeah, it's
thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the call. I'm sure that's a very frustrating for somebody who tried to do the right thing. Let's get a quick comment on that, and then we're going to go to a couple of real brief tips.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that the benefit for non-working spouses has been in there early, because my grandmother, I was commenting off the air, my grandmother had the best experience with Social Security, having not worked and not paid into the system. She collected until age 99 and a half. Simply by inheriting my grandfather's Social Security benefits. And so, but you're right, the legislation has changed many times. The payroll taxes have gone up, the benefits have been added to, and various forms of taxing Social Security benefits by a means test have been implemented. So it's certainly a moving piece of legislation that has been tinkered with quite a lot. And because of that, all the rules make it very, very difficult to know exactly when you should take it and how you should file.
Okay, so you guys have the seminar coming up, and I know you're going to be getting into a lot of these different issues, and we'll give that information in a minute. But there was one that you wanted to make sure this is very broadly applicable when people are going in and applying for Social Security benefits. There's something they should take into consideration immediately.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we call it, there are a number of loopholes out there. And according to the Social Security Administration's party line, they would say it doesn't matter when you file. Early or late, you're going to get the same amount of benefits. And that would be true if we were gender neutral.
Yes.
And we all died at the same time. But the fact is we're not. There's men have different life expectancies than women. And we all know that we have, different health histories that would determine our life expectancy. But one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that if someone is filing at age 66, they can actually choose to, or deem, according to Social Security, to only file for spousal benefits, which means you can actually put your own personal benefit on hold.
Mm-hmm.
Every year you put your benefit on hold, it goes up a year. Okay, so that's why the benefits are there, particularly for men. Who are more likely to die earlier than their spouses, to wait as long as possible. So their spouse, particularly if they're not working, will inherit that much larger benefit.
Hmm.
But what those people don't realize is that there's an opportunity there to actually file for spousal benefits on your, perhaps your wife's benefit, your husband's if theirs is higher. And that's 4 years of benefits. We call that file as a spouse first.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the loopholes that just is not talked about. It's not according to the Social Security party line. And it's something that even if you go into the Social Security Administration, we've had a number of people do this, and say, I only want to file for my spousal benefit, I'm at full retirement age, you often have to talk to two or three people to know that that's even possible.
Because they don't present it to you, or they're not familiar with the concept?
That's right.
Yeah, it turns out that Social Security workers have to be certified to talk to you about various benefit options, and very few Social Security workers are actually certified on all the options there are. So they'll just tell you about the two options that they know about, and then they're not certified on the rest, so they can't even talk to you about that.
So they couldn't even reference it and say you should talk to the guy down the hall here because he knows about this. They don't even say it?
No, you actually have to know what you're asking for before you go into the Social Security office, and you need to know what all the options are beforehand.
Wow.
I think this is a big reason why so many people do file early, is they just don't realize that there are other options to be drawing some income, but delaying their own benefit so that it becomes the maximum benefit.
And it is amazing. If I'm trying to let mine run until 70 to get the highest possible benefit, and that my wife will then inherit that higher possible benefit, that at 66 I can file as a spouse on my wife and start collecting Social Security. And that decision alone can be worth between $24,000 and $48,000 extra benefits over the next few years. And then mine is continuing to grow. And then at 70, I can file for my own.
This is so valuable. Would you give us once again the date, place, and time of the upcoming seminar where you're going to be giving this information away for free and in great detail?
And again, it's part of the NAPFA Consumer Education Foundation next Wednesday, March 14th at 5:30 p.m. at the Charlottesville Senior Center.
Yeah, I hope people will take advantage of this. It's going to be a lot of valuable information, and it really is free. David Murata, Matt Illian, thanks for joining us today. A very, very important topic. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All righty.
Thank you.